thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's November 2020, and you're listening to episode 210, which is a discussion about the religious practices of the nuns, aka the millennial and Gen Z generations. On this episode, I'm joined by Rebecca Valerius, who holds a Master of Arts in Cultural Apologetics from Houston Baptist University. She also has a bachelor's in biochemistry from the University of Texas. Rebecca has written an online exclusive book review for the Christian Research Journal of Strange Rites, New Religions for a Godless World by Tara Isabella Burton. And Rebecca's review is called Bespoke Religiosity and the Rise of the Nuns. You can read her book review free online at our website, equip.org. Rebecca, it's good to have you on.
Thank you. It's good to be on.
Well, today, as I mentioned, we will be talking about the book Strange Rites, New Religions for a Godless World. And that was written by an author named Tara Isabella Burton. And she actually holds a doctorate in theology from the University of Oxford. She's also a staff religion reporter for the online website Vox. And she also has another online column that she writes there from time to time called Religion Remixed. And you can find that on Religion News Service website. But this particular book that she wrote last year in 2019 is her exploration of the rites and practices of the, I would say, millennial generation, which she would call the religiously unaffiliated, or sometimes they've been dubbed the nuns. So I'd like Rebecca to just kind of summarize, like, what is the point of Strange Rites? What does she kind of explore in her book?
So in Strange Rites, Dr. Burton, who, as you said, is an Oxford-trained scholar of religion, so she's really highly credentialed in doing this, she seeks to tell the story behind the nuns. So we've heard all the numbers, but what's actually the story going on here? And like you said, these are the religiously unaffiliated, and in particular, she focuses on those in America. And we typically call these people the nuns, because that's the box they check on surveys for religiosity. And in this book, she asks questions, who are these people and what exactly do they believe? Are they genuinely unreligious? Many atheists like to tout these numbers as, you know, evidence of the growing irreligion of the West. And she asks, are they evidence that as science advances, more and more people are becoming, quote, embarrassed to believe in God, as the new atheist Sam Harris once prophesied? She really seeks to get behind the statistics and surveys to tell the real flesh and blood story about the nuns. So it's a very, I would say it's an extremely thorough investigation into the rise of this new demographic.
Normally I would ask this at the end of the interview, but I want to ask it at the beginning. And that's, do you think, first of all, that Christians should even read this book? And then what about this particular topic drew you to deciding to review it? What was it that made it interesting to you?
Yeah, so I'd say at least two things motivated me to read this book. First of all, for Christians, no one can deny that America is becoming less and less Christians. And looking at the statistics, the nuns represent almost 25% of American adults, roughly the same numbers of evangelicals and Catholics. And their numbers have been steadily increasing over the past few decades, especially among the younger generations, like the millennials, as you mentioned. So I think every Christian who takes the Great Commission seriously needs to understand this demographic, what makes them tick, what they believe, and what has motivated them to leave traditional Christianity behind. And the second reason I reviewed this book, I would say, is selfish. This group is overwhelmingly young, and I'm a parent, so I want to know what's going on here. Burton herself is of the millennial generation, and she is someone who fit into the category of nun at one time. So she is able to give the reader a unique insider's perspective of this group, both as a professional researcher and academic, and as someone who was a nun herself. She opens the book with a fascinating story about her own experience as a nun, and I can talk about this a little bit later. So Burton's Insider's analysis, I think, is extremely valuable for me as a Christian parent. I want to be able to prepare my own children to navigate a culture that is becoming less and less Christian. God has given all of us as Christian parents the tremendous responsibility to know the culture in which we are sending our kids. And the reality is that the religious landscape our kids will be entering is very complex and actually quite confused. I think it's even more confused than the one I entered as a Gen Xer. So I want to know how to help my kids navigate it well and hopefully better than I navigated it. And I think Burton's book is tremendously valuable for this.
I think it's true that if you are in a particular community, like so many Christians are, that we tend to be within that community, we don't have as much interaction maybe as we should with people outside that community or people who fall into this category of understanding maybe they grew up in the church and then they left. And why did they leave? And the interesting thing for me in this whole generation, the millennials, is we were talking about this before the podcast, is that the oldest millennials are now 40. So they're older. You know, they're having kids and they have school-age kids, and some of them might even have some teenagers. So how is their view of no religion impacting that next generation, the Gen Zs that they might be parents to, that's different from kind of the traditional religious, you know, terms and culture that we moved in prior to basically what we find ourselves in now, which is a post-Christian society, at least in America. We're moving in that direction. So what is Burton's overall thesis about these religiously unaffiliated people, the nuns? What does she say specifically about them?
Yeah, and this is the part of the book that is extremely fascinating. So her overall thesis is that far from being embarrassed at religion, as Sam Harris was thinking, the nuns are actually extraordinarily and crazily religious. They're just not traditionally religious. She writes that, quote, they may not be traditionally religious, but they are not exactly secular either. And in fact, she contends that the use of the term secular to describe the nuns is misleading, as it obscures what she calls are the kaleidoscopic beliefs of this group. Instead, she argues for a new term, calling them the religiously remixed, which I think is absolutely brilliant because we live in the age of remixing all kinds of old tunes, right? Well, they're in a sense remixing a lot of the same beliefs that have been around for a long time. She writes that the remixed, quote, envision themselves as creators of their own bespoke religions, mixing and matching spiritual and aesthetic and experiential and philosophical traditions. So I liken it to a kind of spiritual fluidity in which the religiously remixed see themselves as consumers, not only consumers of different types of cereal and iPhones and stuff, but consumers of religion. And they feel the freedom to build their own worldview based on their own individual tastes and preferences and needs. It's kind of like a buffet style approach to spirituality. One of the things that she writes is that the key to understand these nuns is that they are highly individualistic. They privilege intuition and emotions and experience while explicitly rejecting traditional institutional religion. They are very suspicious of institutional religion. They don't like external authority, creeds. And I think most importantly, they reject moral universalism or objective morality. Burton says that the remix see all these things not only as irrelevant, but as active sources of evil. So one of the things she notes is that many of the nuns she interviewed for the book would agree with the statement, whatever is right for your life or works best for you is the only truth you can know. And she says that 74% of American millennials agree with this statement, whereas just 39% of seniors, baby boomers, and older agree with that statement. So all in all, instead of being increasingly irreligious, the remixed are crazily religious. They are desperately seeking meaning and purpose in their lives and are turning to all kinds of spirituality to find it. Sam Harris's Godless World just won't satisfy them. So one might say that they are, I think, as I read this, I kept thinking that they just intuitively sense the God-shaped vacuum that Pascal talked about in their hearts, and they're restlessly seeking to fill it with anything and everything. And in our modern Western world, with our wealth and, you know, disposable income and time, they tend to have the income and means to do it.
I think it's interesting, in one of her columns a while back, she talked about how the nuns, or, you know, like you said, the religiously remixed, they are wanting to be on spiritual journeys. And one of the ways they do that is through like this idea of personal wellness.
Yes.
And she talked about, in fact, for our listeners, we have an article in the current issue of the Christian Research Journal print edition that Ann Kennedy wrote on self-care.
Yes.
And, you know, Gwyneth Paltrow's Goop website.
Yes, that features a lot in her book.
Yes. Yeah. And so Burton talks about how that consuming various different products that are meant to help bring you like inner peace and wellness is part of like a religious ritual, but it's just tied to buying a product for the religiously remixed. And for them, they think, well, if I do this, I'm creating this meaning that the world will be a better place because I'm buying, you know, certain kind of coffee that's been sourced to be, you know, good and not taking advantage of the workers who pick the coffee, and just the different things that, you know, whether it's you're going to have a spa treatment that helps you have wellness for yourself so that you have your own, you know, spiritual well-being. And I thought this was really interesting to me that she said that her generation is buying the very things that, quote, organized religion used to provide us for free, end quote. So I thought that's funny.
Oh, marketers are brilliant because they have sensed this spiritual restlessness and they're aware of the disposable income of these people and they're just capitalizing on it. And they're capitalizing on morality in a sense. You know, you buy these and it's not necessarily a bad thing to have ethically grown things and such. But, you know, there's a fine line where it just becomes predatory in a way.
So I thought that was interesting. It's like, well, now we feel good about ourselves. We're buying these things. But you know what? Organized religion used to give it to us for free, but they reject that, you know?
Yes.
So I thought that was an interesting observation.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today on episode 210, I'm joined by guest Rebecca Valerius, who has written an online exclusive book review for our journal of the book Strange Rites, New Religions for a Godless World by Tara Isabella Burton. Rebecca's review that you can read for free online at her website, equip.org, is called Bespoke Religiosity and the Rise of the Nuns. Well, the Christmas holidays are coming up, and if you're looking for a unique gift for a family or a friend or even your pastor, we'd like to suggest that you give them a gift subscription to the Christian Research Journal, which you can do for $33.50 at our website, equip.org. And it's a gift that they will get a little surprise every time an issue comes out throughout the year. So you can go on over to equip.org and do that. Another way that you can support us is to give us a tip, which you can easily do also at the website. If you go to the main page and you see magazine at that drop-down menu, you will see Postmodern Realities Podcast. Hit that at any landing page. You will find a link where you could give us a tip for this podcast to keep it coming to you, which is completely free. And you can tip us something like $3, $5, $10, something like that, the cost of what you would have been in the past before this pandemic paying for some coffee out or maybe even a meal out. So if you have some extra money that you could tip us, we'd be really grateful. But we'd be most grateful if you could tell people about this podcast. Simply tell a friend about your favorite episodes and have them become a subscriber and a listener to our content. And in addition, we would really appreciate it if you could, as I say every episode, please head on over to Apple Podcasts and look up our podcast, Postmodern Realities. If you could give us a starred review, or even better yet, a written review of a couple sentences about why you like this podcast, we'd be really grateful. And as I mentioned a few episodes ago, we haven't had any written reviews since August. It's now November. And I know there are thousands of people that download this podcast when I see the downloads. So I would be so grateful if you could take the time, to go ahead and give us a rating or review. And it is Thanksgiving coming up. It is the month of November. So I just want to tell you how grateful we are to all of our listeners and all of our subscribers and all of our partners and all of our tippers. We're so thankful for you that you help enable us through your gifts to be able to share this podcast with you completely free of charge and to bring you all this content with all of our great Christian Research Journal writers. And so this Thanksgiving, we're thankful for you, and may God richly bless your time with family and friends. Well, you were talking about how Burton has kind of renamed this group from the Nuns to the Religiously Remix. So why don't you give us a little bit of the demographics that she mentions, like what is their age group and do they have any particular political leanings of this group? And so what are some of the characteristics of the Remixed?
Yeah, so Burton's book, she goes into great detail. So she's an excellent researcher and she really knows the statistics. So she goes into a lot more detail than I will here. But in summary, the Remixed are overwhelmingly young and left-leaning politically. The more left-leaning tend to be female. Interestingly, though, there is a small contingent that leans to the extreme right, and they are predominantly male. And she notes that it's probably kind of a reaction to some of the extreme feminism in the female left-leaning group. Still, only about 7% of Americans identify outright as atheist or even agnostic, and these tend to be young men. Females by far make up the Nuns. And about their beliefs, Burton writes that a full 72% of them still say they believe in, if not the God of the Bible, some kind of higher power. 55% of the Nuns believe in a higher power spiritual force that's distinct from the Judeo-Christian Bible, the Judeo-Christian God, while like an incredible 17% of them say that they do believe in the God of the Bible, but they don't consider themselves traditionally religious.
That's really interesting that so many of the Remixed are women. That surprises me. I wouldn't think that. But then again, we were just talking about Gwyneth Paltrow and Goop and all these other companies like the Honest Company. So I think that one also falls into that same thing where all of their products are, you know, organic. And I think it was started by this actress, Jessica Alba, and it's a billion-dollar company. Yeah. And so women can feel good about themselves. Like, I'm buying laundry detergent from them and it's not going to harm the environment. And so that's kind of, I guess, their form of, you know, worship in a sense that they're trying to bring some kind of meaning to things. So I want to just kind of dig in a little bit more to these Remixed people. What is kind of their religious upbringing? You did earlier mention that some of them had left the church. Mm-hmm. What kind of backgrounds do some of these people come from?
I would say that one of the things that's very important in reading this book and why I think Christian parents should definitely read it, because it'll be a good kick in the pants to make sure that you are teaching your children in the way they should go. Burton found that there is a strong correlation between the religiosity of parents and whether or not their children grow up to identify as nuns. So out of all the groups surveyed, theologically evangelical, conservative evangelicals had significantly better retention rates than mainline Protestants or Catholics. And children of parents who took their faith seriously, who demonstrated to their children that it was the sole source of meaning and purpose in their lives, and who sought to live out their beliefs consistently, who were very involved in church, those children are not leaving organized religion by and large. By contrast, the Remixed were overwhelmingly raised in households in which religion sort of only touched the surface of their lives. The church being a place to receive some kind of social benefit, but not the exclusive or even primary source of meaning or purpose. They saw their parents going outside the church to find these things, whether it was in academics or in some other kind of political activism. Burton writes that the Remixed are the kids who saw their parents attend church and who went to Sunday school, but they were nevertheless acutely aware that their parents didn't actually believe all that stuff. So overwhelmingly, the Nuns are the ones that came from parents who didn't take their religion seriously.
Well, that's interesting. She also had an article in her column on the Religious News Service just about there is this sliver, I guess, within these Remixed people, which she calls weird Christian Twitter, and like she sees them on Twitter, and she just says they're mostly Roman Catholics, but there's a few, you know, Anglicans and Eastern Orthodox in there too. They're all young, but they are resisting this kind of left-leaning political identification, and they are seeing Christianity as like counterculture. So they're like being counterculture to things that are in the norm right now. And so that's kind of funny that they've come all the way back around and they're just, you know, liking liturgy and different things like that. Yes. So I think it's really funny that she's calling them weird Christian Twitter, but they're mostly very quite young and they are really holding to traditional forms of Christian liturgy. So I think that's very fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was just mentioning weird Christian Twitter. And so that's just probably one of the different groups that she's written a bunch on witches as well. And you note that in your review that she explores the various different, you know, subcultures, the religious subcultures of the remix. So what are some of these and how does the internet connect them to one another? And that's something that parents should know about too, because if our kids are searching and we are not engaging with them and having them let in the safety of our own homes where we're bringing them up, where we can point them to Christian truth, we need to have them ask us all those hard questions. We need to have them ask whatever they want, whether it's exploring, you know, Wiccan religion or even, hey, we go to this kind of like contemporary Christian, you know, evangelical church, but we're really interested in, I'm like exploring weird Christian Twitter. So what is liturgy? Like, can you help me explain why people would have a prayer book or, you know, just different things that they can ask us. I think it's very important, but I think you're noting that they do turn to the internet to kind of help them because they are an internet technology driven, you know, generation.
She mentioned so many things in the book that I wasn't even aware of, like 4chan, and I don't even know if I'm saying the right words. I mean, there's so many things on the internet that these kids are connecting. The whole gaming community is one where they is a very much of an entrance into it. But these younger people are able to find, actually, they view community online as more real in some ways than community in person. So, and we as parents, and we're not this internet generation, we that's just foreign to us. So Burton highlights several trends. So wellness culture, which you mentioned earlier with Gwyneth Paltrow and Goop and all that is one example. There's Soul Cycle, she goes into that. So basically wellness culture is the newest version of self-help. And this is this idea that you can sort of take control of your life, positive thoughts, you know, it has some connections with Scientology. Another is this rise in modern occultism. And you mentioned witchcraft. Wiccan is very popular. And I remember hearing about this as a young kid in the 80s, but we didn't have the internet where kids could like go and connect with other Wiccan communities, and they can today. Another one is these techno-utopians, she calls them, in the Silicon Valley, and her chapter on that is fascinating. These are people who want to use technology to sort of bring in this new utopia. A lot of them want to use technology to live forever. There's also a darker side of this is there are societies founded around absolute sexual liberation. So this is polyamory. I think Christian Research Journal has had articles on that. And then another really interesting group is what she calls far-right atavism. And this is an explicit reaction against some of the more leftist trends. So these are people who want to return to sort of this highly masculine culture. She sees like Jordan Peterson is sort of a gateway into a lot of that. So her all of her stuff on that is extremely interesting. I'll leave it to the reader to explore them. But I think she does an excellent job of unpacking them. And overall, just reading them, you can see how they are all desperately trying to seek the meaning void in their lives and finding like-minded individuals online. This part of the book, I will say, is fascinating, but at times it's kind of heartbreakingly disturbing to read, especially the sexual liberation groups, because in trying to create these communities, they are creating sometimes very rigid, role-laden systems that are even more oppressive than the oppressive religion they are purporting to leave. This part of the book I just kept bringing to mind Romans 1 and Paul's warning that we humans have a tendency to, when we stop worshiping God, we start worshiping earthly things that he created that are good, but were never meant to be worshiped. And in the process, we pervert them.
You know what I think is fascinating, especially about the mention that she has about tech in Silicon Valley, is that, you know, this younger generation is, hey, we're freed up from corporate control of ourselves, but yet they're the very people that are running most of the companies that like are Twitter, very yeah. much corporate entities in our own lives, like whether it's Facebook or Google. And the interesting thing about those particular companies that are so large is I actually was visiting Northern California a year ago, and I went to the Google campus, and everything is like this self-contained, you know, ecosystem. First of all, I didn't see anybody. I mean, maybe I saw a couple people over 40, but they employ like 22,000 people before COVID on their campus. Wow. And all the kids that work there, they can eat, all of your meals are free, but it's not just like, oh, the free cafeteria. They have like 23 restaurants there, and you could go eat at a food truck, or you could, and so every, and then they have clubs there, kind of like at college. So after work, then you can stay for dinner and you can get together with the, I don't know, anime watching club or whatever clubs that you're interested to meet like-minded people. And so it becomes almost like in their search for meaning, it becomes this community, like how we would see, you know, getting together and knowing people through church, because they don't have church. They don't have those means. Their company yes. is putting them together with 20,000 young people from all over the world. I heard all kinds of languages being spoken as I walked on their campus. And there's people from all over the world, and you're connecting to them, and you have similar things, and you can do all these like-minded things together. So it is kind of fascinating how that, and then you can literally be there all day if you wanted to. I mean, wow. they have sleep pods. You could actually sleep pods. Some people had an RV that they were, you know, real estate's very expensive in Northern California. So I saw some RVs parked there on their wow. campus. And I noticed that there was a chiropractor there. So it's like, it's become that community that yes. they would reject the church from being that they left.
Exactly. Yes, that's amazing. It's definitely, it's like a monastery, Google Monastery or something.
Yeah, I mean, wow. you're there, and it's kind of like your college experience continues, right? So you're right. only around more tech heads like yourself, and you can, you know, eat all your meals there and do all that stuff, and you're socialized with everybody from but work see, in a different
say,
way.
I would say it was more, even more limiting to the church, because in the church you have more of a chance of sitting in a pew next to someone who is not a tech head, who maybe is a ranch hand,
right?
versus
that's true.
At Google. So it's actually even more limited than a church. That's
I do think that's true, because the internet has allowed us to find all these subcultures. I mean, even for other generations. So it's like, you know, if you wanted to find some mom's group that, you know, knitted and played tennis on Tuesdays and, you know, cooked all their meals from scratch, you probably could find that as a group on Facebook. It's gotten to be so tribal. Yeah. So I think that's very interesting that they've diversified, but it's caused this tribalism, which the very teachings of Christianity is not tribalism. People would say that it is, but it's actually welcoming anybody.
Yeah.
Not you have to be from a certain kind of place or certain kind of background. So I just think that is really interesting. Now, one thing that you mentioned about the Remixed is that they tend to lean quote unquote left. So they tend to be more progressive in yeah. terms of their embrace of various different movements. So how would you say that she, you know, characterizing them as changing the political landscape specifically in the United States?
Yeah. So, well, we talked about, you know, they're broken up in all these little tribes, and how could they ever coalesce to really compete with something as powerful as Christianity? And one of the things that she mentions is that a lot of them are kind of coalescing around Marxist political philosophy and social justice activism. And that is one reason why it's taking on almost a religious tone in our country. First of all, I'll point out that Marxist political philosophy borrows a lot from Christianity. So the more left-leaning nuns tend to be drawn into the Marxist philosophy, its grand metaphysic of power and oppression, it's their good and evil, is very compelling for them. And it gives them a purpose, because the purpose of the individual is to dethrone the oppressors, you know, through social justice activism. And then another thing that's interesting is that they're, in response, many right-leaning remixers are being propelled into what Burton calls a reactionary atavism. And it sees history as a process by which feminists and the politically correct, along other insufficiently heroic examples of modern decaying civilization, have caused us to lose touch with our primal masculine instincts. It's very Nietzschean. If you've studied Nietzsche, there's just a lot of Nietzschean undertones in that movement. But most importantly, both of these opposing political movements are fighting to replace Christianity as a new civil religion. So for, you know, since our founding, religion, Christianity, whether or not it was really believed by people, was certainly our civil religion. And they're pretty good contenders. They have these cosmic narratives that both seek to explain and identify evil. They each provide the vital elements of meaning, purpose, and community, which the church does, as we've talked about. And they've even developed their own uniquely modern sacred rites and rituals. For the left, she points out there's the social, in the social justice activism, when we look at all the cancel culture, she said that's kind of like a liturgy for them, you know? And for the right, she says there's these highly abusive pylons on the internet. I haven't seen any of these, thankfully, but the way she describes them, that sounds terrible. And she notes how both have transformed just simple clicks and likes and postings on social media sites, or like we mentioned earlier, buying certain products, into moral actions that have deeply significant, you know, cosmic meaning.
I think it was really interesting. I was reading an article recently in the New York Times that was talking about, we're just, you know, it's November 2020, as I mentioned, and we are, you know, winding up the presidential political season. And they had an article in there about how younger people use TikTok to cause political disruption of various different political rallies, and that they bought up, all these kids bought up thousands and thousands of seats, or they not, they're, you know, they're not for sale, but you know, you have to get a ticket to go to various different rallies, and they bought all of those up. And then there, and when they did media coverage, there was hardly anyone there because it was something that they did as, you know, some kind of statement that they could make, and they use technology to do it. So I do find that's interesting. That really very practically describes what she was talking about. So what do you think are some of the biggest takeaways for Christians when it comes to her research and, you know, your encouragement that with discernment that you should read this book?
Yeah, I think more than anything, just for myself as a Christian apologist, I'm always fascinated with this sort of thing. Strange Rites demonstrates that we cannot live without meaning. And ultimate meaning in our lives. We cannot live without seeing ourselves as part of a larger narrative in which we are somehow indispensable players. And this just goes right in line with something that Viktor Frankl, the famous Jewish psychologist and Nazi concentration camp survivor, observed. He said, one of my favorite quotes is, "Man's main concern is not to gain pleasure or avoid pain, but rather to see meaning in his life." And so the ultimate meaninglessness of the new atheists like Sam Harris, the ultimate meaninglessness of their godless world will simply not satisfy us. And Burton's own experience as a restless nun, I think, powerfully demonstrates this. So her opening of the book, the first chapter starts, she talks about her own story of her search for meaning in the incredibly bizarre world of immersive theater in New York City, something I had never heard of. It sounds kind of fun, but a little weird too, depending on the play you're doing. But it's a place where the audience becomes part and parcel of the play. So they actually become participants. And she writes in that chapter that immersive theater is a place where, quote, you got to go inside a magical world, discover symbolic connections, and find meaning, where one is not only an observer, but also becomes an essential part of the story being told. So it's a world, I would add, that's full of meaning and enchantment that was prepared just for you, the audience member, in this case by the playwrights. The irony is that in immersive theater, you do not create your own meaning. You discover it and then seek to enter it. And as a Christian, I'm thinking, well, this is exactly what Christianity has to offer, isn't it? And this is proof that this is what the nuns are starved for, because this is what God has designed them for. So as Christians, I think especially for this generation, we need to be presenting Christianity to them in this way. It's not just a set of propositions and creeds, although those things are extremely important. They're what the creeds are, what ground what we believe, but it's also an incredible narrative that God has, you know, that he has chosen for us to be a part of. And it's filled of, you know, incredible meaning and purpose.
I think what's interesting is that, you know, in the last, I don't know, maybe more than 25 or 30 years, maybe the last 50 years, our culture has started to define what Christianity is versus what the Bible says that it is. And so I think we've lost that. And so people don't even know, especially in that generation, like, you know, how many people have actually really read the Bible? I know there are a lot of people that are super critical about the Bible, but then if you ask them, have you ever read the Bible? They're like, no, but I know I don't agree with it. Well, it's one of those things where it's, I think we've lost that understanding of what is really Christianity about and what does it mean? Because like you said, those very things that they're looking for to find meaning and purpose are ultimately found in knowing who God is and being in a relationship with him. And it's not just a relationship with God that's individual, although I think the American church has emphasized that, maybe wrongly overemphasized that, but it's being in community with one another, with other Christians.
It's the incredible tension, you know, and a recent book I read that I highly recommend too is Tom Holland's Dominion. He goes through the history of Christianity starting, you know, its beginning. But one of the things he points out is that individualism itself was created by Christianity. But we just tend to, you know, in our humanness, overemphasize it. And the remix arguably, you know, radically, you know, pervert the idea of individualism. But it's both, we're both an individual that comes before God and has a personal relationship with him. But it's also a community. We need both.
And I will point out to our listeners, if they didn't already know, that Tom Holland is not himself, not a Christian. So it's very fascinating.
But he's coming back to the faith, from what I understand, as it does seem like Tara Burton is as well. In some interviews that I listened to her as I was reading her book, she is coming back to the faith as well. So,
yes, she definitely is. And sounds like from her writings, in a journey, you know, in process on some of these things. And so it is very interesting. Well, finally, on a much lighter note, I have some fun rapid fire questions for Rebecca. So Rebecca, it's fall. Starbucks pumpkin spice latte, yes or pass?
Pass.
I don't think I've had one person say yes to that. Okay. So cups in your cupboard, in your kitchen, are they right side up or upside down?
Up, right side up.
And would you say that you are an idealistic person and relaxed, or are you an overachiever?
Probably overachiever.
And does your family decorate your home for fall and the holidays for Christmas?
A little. I'm terrible about it. A little. I could do more. I hate clutter, so...
And do you guys have any specific holiday traditions as a family that you do every year? It doesn't have to be religious, but some kind of tradition that you do, whether it's Thanksgiving, at Thanksgiving or Christmas.
Oh my goodness. Well, at Christmas, we always go look at Christmas lights. We always go first to Brahms, which is an ice cream place here in the South. I'm in the Dallas area. And then we get ice cream and we go look at Christmas lights all over town. And we've been doing that since the girls are really, really little.
Well, that sounds like a fun thing to do as a family. Well, thank you for being on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's been fun.
You've been listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's episode was number 210, and our guest has been Rebecca Valerius. She has written an online exclusive book review for us of Strange Rites, New Religions for a Godless World by Tara Isabella Burton. And Rebecca's book review, which you can read for free online at her website, equip.org, is called Bespoke Religiosity and the Rise of the Nuns. We'd like to hear from you, so connect with us on social media. Like the Bible Answer Man Facebook page and follow CRI, Christian Research Journal, Hank Anagraph, and the Bible Answer Man on Twitter. And please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man channel on YouTube. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the Postmodern Realities podcast on iTunes, and please rate and review our podcast. When you rate and review our podcast, it helps others see our content. And please share this episode on your social media accounts. Be sure you tune in daily to the Bible Answer Man broadcast, hosted by CRI President Hank Anagraph, who answers your questions live on air. To ask Hank a question, call 888-ASK-HANK, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. In addition, head to iTunes and subscribe to Hank Unplugged, Hank's audio podcast. Follow Hank off the grid, where he has in-depth conversations with some of the brightest minds discussing topics you care about. So until our next Christian Research Journal author conversation, thanks for listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast.